Now, this is All In. I'm Taylor Bennett. Now, yesterday was World AIDS Day, first designated on December 1st in 1988. Today, we're talking about the many people who are affected by HIV and AIDS in Indiana, the groups that work to help them, and how the pandemic has changed things this year. If you have questions or comments on our show today, let us know on Facebook or Twitter at All In Indiana. You can also leave us a voicemail. You can call us at 866-476-3881. You can just give your name, where you're calling from, and also just a quick question or comment, and we'll do our best to get it into the conversation. Again, that number is 866-476-3881. And you can also send us some high-quality voice messages with your smartphone app. It's called All In Vox Pop. It's free and easy to use. You just need to search for All In Vox Pop on your phone's app store. We're joined now by two guests. Alan Witchie is the president and CEO of the Damien Center, and also Todd Lair, executive director of Step Up, Inc. Welcome to the both of you today.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, thanks for being here. Alan, let's start with the big picture. How would you characterize the current state of HIV and AIDS in Indiana right now?
Well, I think it's really important to look at the lens from the federal level, which declared about 48 sort of hot spots around the country as the sort of the key places where the epidemic continues to flourish. And if they are addressed, would kind of help end this epidemic. And Marion County was one of those hotspots. So when you look at across the state, the epidemic is not necessarily as significant, although there are still new cases coming in across the state, but it's not as significant as it is here in Marion County. So from that perspective, we really do want to look at how to find solutions and focus a little bit more on this sort of Indianapolis, greater Indianapolis area.
Right. You're based in Indianapolis, but I mean, you also keep track of statewide, correct?
Yeah, we are a statewide entity, and we have clients and patients that come from around the state here. So we think it's really important because the epidemic looks different in a rural community, for instance, versus a metropolitan center. And naturally, you would expect more cases in the metropolitan center and see the growth that you see here. But it doesn't mean that it's not important to address from the whole statewide perspective as well.
Yeah. Well, obviously, things have changed. How do you see it? How have things changed in recent years around HIV and AIDS and maybe just the efforts to help people affected by it?
Yeah, I think, you know, there continues to be growth in the epidemic. I think people don't necessarily still see it as the crisis that it was because the medications are so much better. Now we can have people live a normal life. It's no longer a death sentence like it was many years ago. And that makes things really different. People can take a medication and prevent themselves from getting this disease. That's the PrEP program. If they're taking their medications on a regular basis and they're exposed to HIV, high probability they will not get it. If somebody is virally suppressed and they have the disease, they're taking it regularly, they won't pass that on. That's obviously the undetectable viral load equals untransmittable. So those are our two big arms for the prevention of the disease going forward. The people that the other trends that we have seen, there are more women becoming infected. They're certainly disproportionately impacting people who are Black and brown. So African-American and Latinx populations are where a large part of the new infections are coming in.
Right. Does that change how you look at things and address it?
Yeah, you know, I think for us as an organization, we have about 4,000 people that come in and out of our doors in a year, and about 1,300 of those are people with HIV, and the rest of them are getting tested and getting prevention. But for the ones, for those that are coming in for our services, we have to be, we've evolved. I mean, like when this disease first happened, the Damien Center served a very large Caucasian population, and now the population of African Americans, Latinx population is the greatest majority of who we're serving. So we really have to adapt and be more culturally sensitive to all populations, and because we have people from all over the world that are accessing services now.
Yeah. Todd, can you tell us a little bit about Step Up Inc. and what it does for those maybe that are not familiar with it?
Sure. Step Up is not unlike the Damien Center. We were founded in 2003 with an eye toward prevention and outreach, particularly to those hard-to-reach populations, the same populations that Alan is talking about now. We provide comprehensive care and resources for wellness for people with dignity and inclusivity. So that includes medical and non-medical case management for those living with HIV, connecting them to resources that they need to lead a full and productive life, like food and nutrition products, housing, transportation, utilities. You know, one of the things is, you know, a fairly high percentage, about half of the folks that we see living with HIV have less than 300%, live at less than 300% of the federal poverty line. So they need access to housing, transportation, utilities, in addition to be able to maintain their health. We also have a very robust prevention and outreach. So we go into the bars and bathhouses, and we distribute safer sex kits, and we educate about HIV and transmission, and help people connect to the testing resources that they need to know their status. We also have a fairly large program for reentry for folks coming out of jail and prison and helping to successfully reintegrate into the community and making them aware of the community health initiatives that we have. So a little bit different, but a lot of the same services that Damien Center offers.
All right. Very, very important services, I would imagine. How do you get that outreach to people who need the services that maybe are not familiar with it? How do they get that?
Sure. I think, you know, we have to meet people where they are. I think, you know, early on, I think we waited, you know, we waited for people to come in for services, and now we have to be more outreach based in the bars, bathhouses, and the other locations where people congregate and need these services. And so, you know, that's always a moving target. You know, nowadays, a lot of people access information online through social media. So we've had to really kind of ramp that up. And then the apps, mobile apps, telephone apps, you know, dating apps. That's where we are now in the last couple of years have spent a lot of time concentrating to interact with people through those to receive the messaging that's necessary for outreach purposes.
And I might want to just add briefly to that, that it's important to have various, you know, partners at the table. So some organizations are really good at building relationships with the populations where we see greater growth rates. And for instance, there's an organization called BU Wellness led by Darren Johnson. And they really were strongly focused on reaching African-American men and have really expanded that to include a lot of women now. We had, originally Darren was going to join us today, but he's sick. But they do a really fantastic job of reaching to their populations that might be a little bit different or a little bit harder to reach than what Todd is doing or what the Damien Center is doing. And so it takes really this collective group in the community to reach people effectively and engage them.
Right. Sounds like there, I mean, is there a lot of groups like these?
Yeah, I think it really is. There really is a network. I mean, I think that really BU Wellness and Step Up and Damien Center are the three really community-based organizations who are really working on this. But there are three main ones, but there are other smaller ones. There are, you know, Women in Motion is a smaller one that focuses on women. There are hospital programs at Eskenazi or IU Health. And so it really is a network of people working together to reach through to really complicated and difficult to reach populations.
Right. It sounds like, I mean, it would take a lot of outreach efforts just to make sure that you're targeting a lot of those people that could need those services.
Yeah, when you think about it, there's somewhere when you add in who we know is HIV positive in our community and then what we think is there, which is the CDC gives us estimates on who might be positive but doesn't know their status, who's positive but is out of care. So that is, you know, somewhere between 6,500 and 7,000 people here in this central Indiana region and around 12,000 throughout the state. So it's a sizable number of people that a whole network, even across the state. I mean, there are great organizations in Fort Wayne and Evansville and Bloomington and that are really stepping up and doing this work on a local level so that we can have a wonderful network.
Right. And both of you, your groups work together pretty closely.
Yeah. I mean, I think people can collaborate back and forth. Patients can access certain services that we offer that maybe Step Up doesn't offer and vice versa back and forth as well.
Okay.
And I think one of the things that, you know, Alan and I came on as leaders of our organizations at about the same time, and he and I and Darren at Be Your Wellness have established a good working relationship. We don't want to duplicate anything that's being done at another organization, but I think we all complement each other's services and refer clients back and forth as needed.
Definitely. All right. Well, we'll be right back with our guest after a quick break here. We're talking about groups that work to help people affected by HIV and AIDS and really how this pandemic has had an impact on the groups and the people that they serve. I'm curious, and especially when we come back, I want to talk to you both about how this pandemic has really impacted those groups that you do serve. So it'd be interesting to get more feedback on that. So if you have any questions or comments for the show today, let us know. You can do that on Facebook, or you can go to Twitter. We can be found at All In Indiana. Also, another good way to contact us, if you just want to have a question or anything or a comment, you can leave us a voicemail. You can call us at 866-476-3881. Again, that number is 866-476-3881. I'm Taylor Bennett, and we'll be back in just a little bit. This is All In. Taylor Bennett. Well, we're talking today about groups that work to help people affected by HIV and AIDS in Indiana and how things have been impacted by the pandemic. We love your questions and comments on the topic. You can find us on Facebook and Twitter at All In Indiana, or you can leave us a voicemail, including your first name and where you're calling from at 866-476-3881. And you can also send us a voice message through our free smartphone app. It's called All In Vox Pop. Just search for the All In Vox Pop on your phone's app store. You can send us your question or comment, and we'll try to get it into the show. Again, we're joined today by two guests. Alan Witchie is president and CEO of the Damien Center, and Todd Lehr, executive director of Step Up, Inc. Welcome back.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Alan, and Todd, both, I wanted to talk to you a little bit about how the pandemic has impacted on the work that you're doing.
Yeah. You know, I think nobody could anticipate what would happen this year, obviously. So we were definitely not prepared when the pandemic hit to kind of respond. So I think we just had to really quickly figure out what are we going to do differently, because we knew we couldn't do everything the same. So we really took kind of a three-prong approach. Number one, we really had to figure out what was a core service that had to be done in person. And there were things that we were doing that just had to be done in person, such as a medical lab, certain medical visits, certain visits, certain to get certain items, like we had food and we didn't have a delivery method for food. So we established these things that were really critical that had to continue. And then we established what could be done from home with, help of telehealth and looking at, things like mental health appointments, some case management appointments and those things that could be done online. And then so then we had to get the right technology for that, which was a different thing. And then the final prong we did is we really mobilized around people who were the most vulnerable in our community. So Damien Center found sort of established there were about 40 people who were living on the streets, homeless. They were HIV positive. They were the highest risk people. And we needed to get them to safety. So we rented rooms in hotels and put them in hotels so that they could be quarantined separately, and then work to find permanent housing for them and get them into medical care. So those were our kind of three strategies. And I know, Todd, you guys did some of the same things and some different things.
Yeah, we certainly did. I think, like you, we had to immediately transition from a really office-based system to almost every one of our staff working from home. You know, obviously, we work with people who are already immunocompromised, and so we didn't want them to be in more jeopardy to come in and see us. So there's quite a few procedural changes in terms of, not having to actually sign paperwork and conducting a lot of the work that we did electronically. We also went to home delivery of some safer sex kits and home nutrition, people that needed home nutrition. We set up no contact testing, actually for the first time ever, where we could deliver a test to the home and actually walk people through taking the samples so that we could get them processed. Also, we helped a lot of people. The needs became great quickly, as Alan alluded to for food and housing, transportation, utility assistance. So we did a fair amount of that. We also had to acquire a lot of PPE so that when we were able to open up the office to some degree, that we had were prepared to do that as well. So it was quite a scramble. And then late in the game, we had some money come through to allow us to purchase some tablets so that people who didn't have internet connections or phone connections that were internet connected to be able to access our services and those of the others that they needed to do telemedicine visits and that sort of stuff so that they could continue their care where they may not have been able to do that effectively in the beginning of the pandemic. So it was a challenging year for all of us. And now we've had to trail back and not do as much outreach again in the community and do more testing in office and return back to no contact testing again as the numbers have grown again.
Right. Go ahead. I'm sorry, Alan.
Oh, I was just going to say, I think we did the so many of those similar things, like the tablets, which was a new thing for us too. I think we were both able to implement that, which was exciting because we work with populations that are, low income, some oftentimes no income, and they just don't have necessarily have a smartphone. Everyone thinks that everyone has a smartphone, but maybe they don't, or they don't have minutes on that smartphone. So through the same program, both Step Up and Damien, we were able to get these tablets to people. They do have minutes on them. So when somebody needs to either have a mental health counseling session or have a medical visit, they can literally do it without additional cost to them, because so many of our clients who are already low income were also part of, that service industry and the industry that lost their jobs during this time. So we, in addition to being sort of isolated, we didn't want to add more cost to the way they were doing the way that they would access services. So it was really critical to find ways to engage them that also didn't put an additional financial burden on them.
Right. You talk about financial burden, which I know a lot of people have been impacted really hard financially. But when you look at what you guys are doing, how has it impacted you personally financially as far as in the services that you provide?
Well, I can go first. It's been complicated because we couldn't do our fundraisers, right? Because the fundraisers required people to get in together. So it's like, how do we adapt that? And we do a gala every October. So we had a little bit more time to figure that out. And it was interesting because what we did is we were doing a gala in an empty room, right? So I was, we had to say, like, how can we still do a fundraiser and engage people? So we were on a stage, someone would come out and say something to an empty audience, and we, you know, projected that. And then we had people doing parties in their own home. So people would get these sort of party pack kits, and they would throw their own party in their home with their loved ones and their friends. And so rather than having everybody together, we had all these people in their own homes around the city having their own little fundraiser and still raising money. And so it was a clever way to do it, but something we had never really thought of before.
Well, and have you had any staffing issues since the pandemic started?
Well, we have had, we've had people that have gotten COVID. We've had people that have gotten very sick on staff. We've had clients. We've had situations. I mean, I had it. I think, you know, I was in the hospital for a bit of time. I think many of us have struggled because we were direct service. You know, we are the front line. We provide direct services, and our organization never closed down. So I think that was one thing that was a little bit different, too, between our organizations. Todd was able to transition a lot of his services virtually. You can kind of talk to that. There were certain services that we offer that they don't, that just had to stay in person. And as a result, there was a whole group of us still here. And it's been hard because some of us have gotten very sick and we still come through it on the other side. And you can be as safe as you want, but this virus is very contagious. And we're now fighting a pandemic within a pandemic, right? Because HIV is a pandemic, mm-hmm. and COVID is a pandemic. And how do you respond to that is complicated.
Now, Tom, what does the staffing situation look like at Step Up?
We've fared pretty well since we were able to transition most of the staff home. I think we have around 28 employees. I think we've had about three that have suffered from COVID. Luckily, all of them have recovered well. We have had several clients that were ill, but again, most of them have recovered very well. So, you know, we're lucky in that sense. I think that, you know, people aren't necessarily recovering as quickly economically as they have. But in terms of the disease process, we have survived fairly well.
Yeah. You know, Alan, you talked about some of the challenges that people affected by HIV and AIDS have had to face because of this pandemic. What are some of the other challenges, do you think, that has really played out in people with this pandemic? I mean, you talk about having AIDS is one thing, and you know, also now COVID is a serious problem.
Yeah. You know, I think we have seen a few different ways that has manifested. And number one is there's been a lot more anxiety and, you know, depression related to this. I think that's probably true around the whole community, the state, and everywhere, that that everyone has faced a lot more anxiety and difficulty. But so many of our clients have, you know, significant mental health issues that they're already dealing with. And so those were much more amplified. And that became made for some people really difficult to want to engage. And so that means that, but with HIV, it's really critical to be on your medications and keep on your medication so you can stay virally suppressed. And that mm-hmm. means that you're healthier and you can't pass on the virus. So those things are critical. And finding ways to continue to engage with people throughout the process has been challenging, but important. And then just the vast number of people who had some kind of income coming in no longer have that. So that in addition to all of the issues with their HIV, now they were already perhaps struggling financially at a much greater rate. They're struggling. And then adding on to that, if you get COVID, you can end up in the hospital and nobody could come and visit you, you know, so you might not have the ability to have a support system visit you. And that can be really complicated and difficult as well.
Yeah, I want to talk to you about the mental health aspect because that is a serious problem. We do have a listener voicemail from Charlie who has a question, though, about Step Up and fundraising. Let's listen to that now.
Hello, this is Charlie from Indianapolis, and I'm interested into what Step Up stands for And also, how have both of these organizations dealt with the donations coming in with no Dine Out for Life, no Indie Pride, no AIDS Walk? There's so many fundraisers that have been canceled. So I was very interested in that. Thank you.
Yeah, good question. What do you think, Todd?
Well, Step Up, it used to be an acronym for, you know, testing and education and that sort of stuff. And now it's just become our name, that we step up to fill a void in the community to help people with the issues that they need to lead a healthy life. And so I think it has been a significant issue. Like the Damien Center, we haven't been able to do the traditional fundraising that we have. In the past, I think they reference the, you know, we typically as a state have the AIDS Walk and similar things that feed money to all of our organizations to help with specific client needs. One of the things that we did an appeal for fundraising early on in the pandemic for client-specific needs, not organizational needs, but client-specific needs that we've been able to help clients with from anything from, you know, food, shelter, and housing to, you know, things that they may need for work or other barriers that they're not able to overcome in their lives. And we were fairly successful in just a letter writing campaign to raise some money for that. And so, you know, we would welcome any contributions to the We Step Up Together fund that we have on our website. That's specifically for those client specific needs. It has been a real challenge.
Do you get support elsewhere besides the community?
Yeah, of course, we have some foundational support. And then, of course, you know, a lot of what we are reimbursed for comes from grants from the Marion County Health Department and the State Department of Health. But even that, some of the work that we do with them is based on actual, you know, for instance, tests performed. So if we're not out in the community performing HIV tests, which, you know, we were very severely limited in the early parts of the pandemic, then we're not having that revenue come in as well. So it's been a challenging year to meet all the goals and the needs of the financial picture.
Yeah, I would imagine. I wanted to circle back on the mental health aspect that you had touched on a little bit just a few minutes ago. And I would think that, you know, mental health has been a problem for a lot of people impacted, even if they haven't been directly impacted by the epidemic, that it has to have especially, you know, impact on the people that you serve.
Yeah, you know, I think I can't understate it enough that I think this epidemic has exacerbated a lot of the trauma that people have experienced in their lives. So even if people were doing well and dealing with a lot of their mental health issues, this has really pushed that to a new level for them. What we see, which is unfortunate, just is that we had three full-time mental health therapists on our staff. And because of the increase, we added another one. So we had to hire in the midst of this pandemic. So you do see that while some services, I think like Todd has said, for instance, HIV testing and STI testing has been less because of the nature of, you know, you have to do it in person or it's harder to do it from home, do it at somebody's home. And other services have increased related to mental health. And it's harder because it's very hard to do support groups, for instance. You could do it in a Zoom call, but you don't build the same kind of rapport that you do with a therapist or in a group. And the number of people that are trying to get into mental health therapists right now is extraordinarily high. Even amongst the general population, people are maxing out their ability to get to the session, and the therapists are trying to figure out how to accommodate all the requests. So for us, that has been a growing area in this pandemic, and we're still seeing the requests for that continue to grow.
And I would imagine the isolation, too, of just being at home and not being able to go out and see those therapists and connect with others.
Yeah, it's been that has been really scary. And the tablet program that we mentioned earlier has been a wonderful thing for us. So we have we allocated one of our therapists to do exclusively at-home therapy by these tablets, because we had that problem. We had people that are desperately in need of mental health counseling and want to get it, but they're terrified to leave their home. They're scared to get exposed to COVID again, because they already have a compromised immune system with HIV. So that makes it that much harder. And it's been really nice that we've had that alternative in a way we wouldn't have had otherwise. And really, Marion County Public Health Department really stepped up to help both of our organizations to get the funding to fund these tablets and allow us to expand our services in a way we otherwise would not have probably thought to do or had the resources to
do. Right. Okay. Well, we'll be back with our guest after just a quick break. We're live today with guests to talk about groups that work to help people affected by HIV and AIDS. Again, if you have any questions or comments for our guests today, you can find us on Facebook or Twitter. You can find it at All In Indiana. You can also leave us a voicemail at 866-476-3881. Again, that number is 866-476-3881. I'm Taylor Bennett. We'll be back in 90 seconds. This is All In. This is All In. I'm Taylor Bennett. Back now to our discussion on efforts around HIV and AIDS in Indiana and how the pandemic continues to have an impact on those efforts. And as always, we'd love to hear your questions and comments. You can find us on Facebook and Twitter at All In Indiana, or you can leave us a short voicemail. And you can just leave your first name and where you're calling from. You can do that by calling 866-476-3881. Again, 866-476-3881. Again, we're joined by two guests today. Alan Ritchie is a president and CEO of the Damien Center, and also Todd Lair, executive director of Step Up, Inc. Welcome back, both of you.
Thank you
so much.
Alan, you mentioned this a little bit at the beginning. The Damien Center serves people statewide. And I was curious to find out what it's been like, and you also talked about this a little bit, rural, as trying to reach those in rural areas.
Yeah, you know, it's been an interesting added complication, because on a normal, day, it can be very, the distance can be hard for people who come from rural communities here. Sometimes it's very appealing to come to a metropolitan city so that your local community doesn't know that you're seeking HIV treatment or HIV care, and it's nice to be able to remain sort of anonymous. But when you're in the middle of a pandemic, and we also had, really this year was the racial reckoning piece happening, it got very, we received calls from people who were in the rural communities who were nervous to come to the Metropolitan Center to say, like, I usually come to get my care there. Is it safe for me to come there because of the levels of the epidemic there, the pandemic there? And there are other things happening, that made people nervous to figure out whether they could come. And so I do think it was really critical to find different ways. So, for instance, we do a sort of a mail, a home order mail for HIV testing and our PrEP program. So PrEP is that medication you can take if you're HIV negative and you get exposed to HIV, then you will not get it. And in the past, you really had to come in person to meet with a medical provider and get your HIV labs done and all that. And what we did is we found a way to do that in their home. So we could send everything to somebody's home. They could get the test. They could meet with a medical provider online, and then we could ship them their prescription directly to their home. And they didn't ever have to leave their community. They didn't ever have to come into the building. And things like that were tremendously helpful to get to these rural areas where Things just felt really different and more difficult to get into the metropolitan area.
Yeah, telehealth, big reach as far as ability to help people? Does it have a big impact?
You know, it does. I think there are people that really like it and find it to be an effective way for them to get the care they want. And there are other people who do not like it. So a lot of our population, very low income, they have a lot of trust issues with institutions and medical institutions from historical. And, you know, you can kind of look at that, especially if you're serving a large African-American or Black population and Latinx population. There's a history in terms of accessing medical care and care from institutions and why people prefer to maybe go to a community clinic or a community-based program like ours. But even given that, it can be hard sell. And so the telehealth gives people an easy way, a nice way to access it in a safer way. But some people still don't trust it. They still don't like it. And it adds another barrier to existing barriers that already are there. And so they prefer to come in person. I think on the other end of this, I wonder what we'll be like. You know, I sometimes have questioned that. How much telehealth will we do when we're done? I think no matter what, it will still be part of what we're doing. I don't think it will be the predominant way that we're providing services. I think we saw through this is that people who are struggling with poverty, they're struggling with housing instability, food insecurity, and with large social issues like racial inequity and inequity around LGBTQ issues. Frequently, the way to engage them and keep them in care is through relationship building. Mm-hmm. And that relationship building is so much easier when you do it in person.
Right.
When you have to do it in sort of whether it's a phone or a video, it's harder to figure out what somebody is comfortable saying or not saying and how you build that relationship. It's harder.
Well, telehealth can be obviously very convenient, but I mean, there's just some things that you can't do through telehealth.
Yes. Yeah. And in that case, things like labs, you know, where you need to run a lab on somebody to find out how the medication is working on them. You can't do a lot of that remotely, and you can't do it on telehealth at all. You have to still collect the specimen. And so you have to get people to come into your lab to run those. And so that creates this sort of necessary focus of bringing people in person. So we still have that. So now in all of this, when we're trying to get as many people on telehealth as we can for safety reasons, we still have to figure out how do we bring in the people that have to come in person, because there are a number of people that really have to be here on site in person.
Well, Todd, you've been doing no contact testing. So how does that work right now?
Yeah, this is something that was brand new to us, too. We'd never done that before. So basically, someone contacts us and says, you know, I want to have an HIV test, but I'm not comfortable coming into the office, or for some other reason, they want to do it more privately in their home. You know, we arrange a time, we go to their home, we go to the door and drop the test. They perform the sample. It could be HIV. It could be also STI testing that we do. And then they get the result. It's an instant result generally. And we make contact with them via phone with our person still on site to kind of walk them through and interpreting the result. And then obviously if we have a reactive test, someone that is HIV positive, then walk them through connecting to resources, connecting them to care. And we have actually had one test that came back during this no contact testing where someone found out that they were HIV positive that would not have otherwise known. So that's kind of how it's played out for us. It was a little slow at first, but you know, in the early days of the pandemic, there were really no other options. There wasn't a whole lot of testing going on. And so it was very popular, and then it's kind of trailed back a little bit now that there are other resources, but we're kind of headed back the other way. So I expect that those number of requests will go back up again.
Mm-hmm. Todd, what about food insecurity? Is your group seeing that as well, too?
Yeah, I think every one of us has seen the need for food. You know, used to tell people, look, take care of your other obligations first, and there's always going to be food resources. But and this pandemic has really stretched those food resources, you know, at food banks and food pantries. And so we've seen a record number of requests for food resources, food cards, and that sort of stuff just to get people through.
Ellen, I wanted to ask you, at the beginning of this year, the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services launched an initiative. It was called Ending the HIV Epidemic. It's a Plan for America. Marion County happens to be among the jurisdictions that are part of the initiative. What is the goal of that?
Yeah, you know, it's I think this was generated from on a federal level because there were sort of two things that came about. One is they were able to look geographically at areas of the country to see where were the highest numbers of new infections coming in. And they came up with this idea that if they focused on those hotspots and trying to eliminate the new infections in those hotspots, we could actually end the epidemic of new infections, right? The number of new people coming into the system, and so that was kind of the concept, and that to do that we would have to do sort of there are these pillars, and one was really about identifying people who don't know their status, so that we make sure everybody who knows their status knows them, because the people who are most likely to pass on the infection today are the people who don't know their status. So getting everyone to know their status is number one. And then number two is, like, you know, how do we make sure that people are on both sides of the equation, both the people who are positive and negative, are taking the medications that help prevent the spread. So in PrEP, that it means the pre-exposure piece is that if you take your medication and you're at risk and you're taking your medication on a regular basis, you will not get the virus, even if you're exposed to it. And then on the other side of that are people who are taking their medications. If they have the virus, they get virally suppressed and they cannot pass on the virus anymore. So that's undetectable equals untransmittable. And I think when they realized that we had all the right medications and we had the right knowledge and we knew where the problem was, right? Those are all the pieces that you have to know. It clicks together into a plan that allows us to say how we can stem this. We can actually end it. And so it is a 10-year plan. And the goal is to bring down the number of new infections by 90%, to get people into care within a very short period of time so that they're safe, they can get untransmittable, and they're not passing on the virus. And then to maintain them in care and keep them healthy, so that they do not pass on the virus and that they stay healthy. And so it is an exciting plan. We have been working on a task force locally to create a plan and try to look at not just what we've been doing and how to enhance the work that we're doing, but also, like, what's different? What do we need to do that we haven't done before in the community? And there are things that, I mean, I think this plan tries to talk to disruptive innovation, right? So what are the kinds of things that maybe haven't happened in the community that could disrupt how the infection is being spread and to try to stop those? So it is a 10-year plan. We are just at the beginning. There's a task force that just finished their work, and a plan will be released to the community by the new year, I believe, and that is being driven by Marion County Public Health Department. I'm pushing that out since they're the lead health entity in Marion County, which is where the key epidemic is. But beyond that, the State Department of Health, IDOH, is looking at it from a statewide level, because we know that while Marion County might have the highest number of infections, there are still infections across the state. So we need to be able to take a very focused approach here in Marion County to stop this epidemic, but also to take that to a higher level amongst all the communities in Bloomington and Evansville and Fort Wayne and into the rural communities. So it is a critical piece to really look at it from local to state. And again, to take what we know and really apply it in a way that we can effectively end this epidemic within 10 years. And it is possible for us to do it. I really do believe it.
Todd, what do you think of the initiative?
I think it's been a very robust planning. There's been a lot of a lot of interviews, a lot of focus groups, and we've gathered a lot of data. I think instead of fighting this epidemic with a sort of broad sweeping net, you know, we're able to take some information that we've gathered and really do a lot more specific targeting. I mean, as Alan said, in 2019, there were 218 people newly diagnosed in Marion County with HIV. And every year since 1992, there's been between 150 to 250 new diagnosed cases. But the complexion of those cases look different now than they have before. So nationally, they say, you know, the Latinx population represents 1/5 of the U.S. population, but in 2018 accounted for 25% of new infections. And Black population is 13% of the U.S. population, and they accounted for 42% of new infections. And so, you know, we really have some very specific priority populations that we need to focus on using the data that we've gathered through this task force process and revise. We have a lot of the tools that we need that we've learned and are tried and true, but instead of casting a wide net and trying to get to the people that we need, we have to really be micro-targeted to the audiences and where they are to get to end this epidemic in the next 10 years.
Yeah, the initiative sounds very promising. I'll be anxious to find out how everything plays out, and especially with the task force and the work that it has in front of them.
Yeah, I think it's a very exciting time to be part of the HIV/AIDS epidemic. Like, you know, we talked about earlier, we're no longer focusing our work like they did in the early days on preparing people to die. It's preparing people to live long, happy lives. And the first part of that is knowing your status and keeping folks who are more likely to become infected to take advantage of the advances in drugs and that sort of stuff to keep that from happening.
All right. Well, good luck to both of you.
Thank you.
And thank you so much for taking time to talk with us today.
Thanks so much.
Yes, thank you so much for having us. I really appreciate it.
All right. Well, have a good day.
You too.
You too.
Again, we're talking, and Alan Ritchie is the president and CEO of the Damien Center, and also Todd Lehr. He's the executive director of Step Up, Inc. today. Our producers are Drew Dodlin and Micah Yason. Scott Cameron is our managing editor, and Adam Gross is our engineer, wonderful engineer, and composed our theme song. If you'd like a podcast of this show or really any past show, you can find it anywhere that you get your podcast. You can also join us tomorrow for a conversation on the North Split Reconstruction Project in Indianapolis. After years of planning and discussions around the project, believe it or not, construction is just about to start with that. We'll learn what the impact will have and how the people who have spoken out against the project feel about it. You can find us on Twitter and Facebook at All In Indiana. I'm Taylor Bennett. Thanks for listening today. This is All In.